Hey everyone, John Bokenkamp here, creator of The Blacklist and co-writer of episode 611, Bastien Moreau. You are listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Don't look so sour, Harold. Aaron will be back next week. Welcome to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Special Agent Rory. So, Troy, it looks like after this episode, I'm going to be the one that's executed. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss number 20, Bastien Moreau, written by John Eisendrath and John Bokenkamp, directed by Andrew McCarthy. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
This episode, we'll cover off on our profiling question from last week, figuring out how Red would escape death. We'll go through this week's case profile for the first part of Bastien Moreau's return. And then, of course, we'll see what you all thought in Special Agent Intel. Remember, if you're enjoying the episode, head on over to Patreon. That's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Fill the fedora, and we can have some exciting, fun stuff for you as we grow the podcast into season 7. We've been renewed, people. Woo-hoo! That's right. Yes, if you didn't hear, season 7 is a go. They got all the contracts worked out. So we will see Megan. We'll see Cooper. We're going to see Wrestler. We'll see Red, of course, who already was confirmed through season 7. And we'll have more fun all the way into 2020. We'll get more into that later in this episode. Because first, we want to know, how did you all think Red was going to escape death? Which he still has not yet, as of this episode.
Not yet. Well, Linda said, it won't happen, but it'd be a bit of a hoot if it were by a Grey Matters team with Scotty and Solomon. I'd love to have some Solomon back. Scotty could get killed in the escape, and that'd be okay.
Damn harsh.
Everybody just wants Solomon back.
Monica said, Red finds a poster of Raquel Welch and slips behind it through a hole in the wall.
We've seen that somewhere before, I'm pretty sure.
But how do you tape the poster back down? That's the real question.
How do you put it back up? From inside the hole. Everybody wants to know that one. Well, Katrin said, in a body bag. Reminds me of Cobra Kai, since they're going to be at C2E2 this next weekend. That should be fun, but fake his death like Liz did.
All right. Annalise goes for the last second pardon.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going too. Tommy King said, the drugs that put in him to kill him won't. Just going to make it appear that way.
Oh, like put you in a comatose state and then roll you out in a body bag.
Yeah, kind of like what they did on Avengers.
And then William Zabka is the one that's guest starring on The Blacklist that week.
One beat per minute.
Oh my gosh. Alexandra said, either the task force will come through with the new immunity agreement pardon at the very last second, or he will break out on his own.
Yeah, so either way, he's getting out some way, somehow. Well, Tatiana said he uses his superpower of mind control to make everyone believe he's dead. But he'll have somehow slipped everyone some LSD and they'll start hallucinating that he's a demigod floating in the air like a Deus Ex Machina. Except because they're hallucinating, the Deus Ex Machina will turn into Glenn and everyone, including the executioner.
Oh, my gosh.
I think that was a throwback to the UN episode when he was talking about LSD and Timothy Leary and everything else.
And that is the most creative response I've heard in a long time.
Everybody turns into Glenn.
George, I have no idea, but I think it would be a great story if Kirk were behind it, since he previously financed the president's campaign. Since Red may have saved Kirk's life with the CRISPR Dr. Shaw episode, Kirk can return the favor.
I thought that myself. I actually put that in my notes for the episode because I thought there was a connection there. Kirk's still alive. Does he come back? But I guess we'll have to see. But that's pretty good. But Anita said, I think Red will die again like it happened in Marrakesh or off the Philippines where Dembe saved his life. The president will make the pardon call in the end, but only after secretly receiving some compromising documents from an unexpected and disgraced source. Dom, who saved Red at the last minute, forcing the paramedics to rush in and revive him.
Has anybody ever been revived after getting the lethal injections?
I'm pretty sure not. I'm pretty sure lethal is lethal.
That's what I would think. I figure it'd be hard to like bring you back if you have all of that fluid running through your system from all those drugs.
Yeah, I mean, basically, they just compromise your entire system, and there's no way to bring you back once it's in your system.
Well, what if there's no drugs in there at all? Caroline says placebo in the needles and smuggled out in a casket to England on the Queen Mary II.
That's creative. I mean, you know, they had the whole conversation with him and the doctor, so people thought there was some kind of connection with him and the doctor. But, well, I guess we'll have to see. Nate said an attack at the prison near the facility that he's getting the lethal injection, the task force or another organization gets read out at the last minute.
And finally, Gigi says going to work around a DNA thing that would allow him to be immune to the lethal injection, and one of Red's people will be on the payroll doing the injecting.
Yeah, I like that one. That could work. It's all about the DNA on this show. Well, for next week's profiling question, we want to know, what are Red's final words?
I think his final words are going to be, is March Madness on yet?
It could be. Does he even get to the final words?
That's a good question, too. That is a good question.
We'll have to see. I guess we'll have to see next
week.
Because
it's a friggin' cliffhanger. Oh, my goodness.
But you know what? I'm never disappointed because the two-parters on the show have never disappointed me once.
Like as the camera's panning in on his face and you're just waiting for him to say, I love you too, or something of that nature. And you're just like, you're getting closer on the edge of your couch that when it finally goes to black, you fall off your couch and hit your bum on the floor.
Bum. That final scene though, that shot where you see like, you see Liz and Dembe and you see Red in the reflection on the glass was amazing. Such amazing cinematography.
All right, well, let's get into this one before we get forced to eat some cabbage soup and dressed herring. Here's this week's case profile. Well, in case you all forgot, Bastion Moreau is the Corsican. Yes, that guy from episode 2 that tried to bomb the UN and the Turkish ambassador. He's back and he's been hired for a hit on two people by the mysterious redheaded woman we saw earlier in the season. We now know her as Anna McMahon, played by Jennifer Farron of Hell on Wheels and Falling Skies fame. She works in the DOJ, so I'm sure at some point she's going to end up being Cooper's boss this season. And she's super shady.
Super.
Well, the task force sets up an epic team heist to steal an encrypted key fob from the president of a bank that houses cash for criminals. The heist almost goes down the toilet, but they are able to pull it off in the end. Turns out that the man in Cairo is just a rounding point to get the actual money to Jonas Kruger. Kruger gives Bastion Moreau some security schematics and schedules as well as his ID. In doing so, Jonas betrays his country of Germany by helping to advance an assassination attempt on the president of Germany's Federal Intelligence Service, Eva Ziegler. Now, there's a larger plot on a dossier about an attack against America. MI6 and Germany have worked together to put it together, and the masterminds behind the plan want it found and destroyed. Funny how those masterminds happen to be Anna McMahon and President Diaz himself. Welcome back to the party, Prez. Then they find the German official Eva Ziegler, who I believe was Christopher Lambert's co-star from Highlander back in the day, and they go and extract her, but guess what? The bugs are back. It was never a bomb at all that was in the hotel. And the Mongolian throat chanters return as well. So what do you think of part one thus far there, Mr. Rory?
Oh, I loved it. The emotions were real. This is why we love The Blacklist. An episode like this, it just reminds us, if people needed to be reminded, of what an amazing show this is. I loved how they're tying The Blacklist just together. We get the bug guy back. You know, the Corsican's back. Like, it's almost like a season one-ish feel where everything's going to start to connect from the season. So I had to go back and watch the beginning of the season just to remind myself. Love the dossier, president working for another power. Have we heard that before somewhere? I don't know. It might be in the news or something. I don't know. I heard something about that. It reminded me of season 3, episode 11, when Red and Liz are in Red's secret apartment. He shows Liz the cabal map. It points out where the cabal is everywhere. It's global, you know, and we haven't heard anything with the cabal since, you know, Red took over. And, you know, it's great that they're going to bring that story back. I think that's where we're going. But could this be a function of the global cabal?
Or could it be one of the other factions on the map? So they had, if I remember the map correctly, it was Gregory DeVry's episode. It was the Cabal, and then their associates were in red and their enemies were in blue. Could this be the enemy faction in the blue on that map?
It could be. I mean, you know, you think about it, like we said, Kirk is connected to Diaz. Red was that's the point too, is that Red was connected to Diaz because he leveraged him to get Liz's badge back, you know, before he was president. So now he's president and now he's against Red. So there's something else, you know, obviously working behind the scenes here, but I kind of like the idea of bringing back, you know, the global cabal that, you know, you just destroyed the one faction of it by releasing the Fulcrum and now they're coming back around to get you.
Or there could be disgruntled members of the cabal that didn't like the way Red took it all down, and those disgruntled members are now coming back around to get Red out of power.
Exactly. And that's the other thing too, is that how long, because, you know, Cooper made the connection too, you know, after Ziegler died, how long has Red known about this conspiracy that he gave them the bug man? Did he know that he was going to be connected to this whole thing? So how long has Red been in the know about this, you know, behind the scenes plot to take down America?
And does he know the plot? I guess that's the bigger question. He might know there's something going down. He just doesn't know what it is.
And how is he doing all of this from jail? I mean, I love it, but that amazes me. Like, this guy's still so connected that he's in jail and he's still, you know, finding out about all these things.
Well, I suppose the bigger plot had already been in play because Anna and the Corsican were involved before Red went to prison. So the fact that he probably knew enough of it prior to getting into the slammer. So I can totally buy it from a TV perspective sake.
Right. And I mean, I just love the idea that he can still do it from behind bars just to show how connected he is. But you're right. Before he went into jail, you know, we had the, you know, the Corsican and everything in the beginning of the season. So how long has he known about this? You know, and what did he exactly know? And when did he exactly know it?
Well, elsewhere in the episode, we do have the world's fastest legal system ever in maneuvering people to their execution, TV or otherwise. And this was just amazing. I had to pull this up. I mean, I know it's TV. I know it's suspend disbelief. It works for the show, blah, 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 blah. But just to give you some perspective on how fast this really was, the time between sentencing and execution in the United States increased relatively steadily between 1977 and 2010, including a 22% jump between 89 and 1990. And then there was a similar jump again between 2008 and 2009. That means it's not getting any faster to get killed. Just putting that out there.
I know that, you know, obviously he pled guilty and, you know, there's no appeals and everything else, but, you know, they're not going to basically just move to kill you in a week.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he turned himself in. Yes, he said, I'm guilty. Yes, he's the number one most wanted criminal in the world. But in 2010, this is 2010, very recent, 2010, a death row inmate waited on average of 178 months. 178 months, that's 15 years between sentencing and execution. Nearly a quarter of inmates on death row in the U.S. die of natural causes before they ever get executed.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny. I guess it's, you know, made for TV execution, we'll call it.
That is even faster than 24 time, as we like to call it. But Red is on death row nonetheless. He's enjoying some conversations with his friend Harold. He's just the best, isn't he? Just the best.
Yes, he is. The best.
Red reminisces about his mom a little bit while sharing his last meal, if you call that a meal, with Liz before being strapped into the chair. But we're going to talk about all of that fun as we discuss our characters. Rory, what was our music this week?
Well, as Red examines the chamber on his initial walkthrough of the execution chamber, we hear "Not Broken" from Sky. Then as Red walks from his cell to the execution chamber and is strapped down, we hear "Farewell" by Uncle. As always, you can hear these songs and all the great songs on the Blacklist by visiting the Spotify playlist or Apple Music playlist, and we have those links on the website at theblacklistexposed.com.
All right, so let's talk about Anna McMahon. We finally have an adversary, I feel, on the show that once again is maybe on the same evil level as the director or Berlin, perhaps. What do you think?
I love it. I like when we get new baddies for Red to execute. I got to be honest. I love it. She's going to be an interesting character because, again, we have these evil entities within the government. I mean, and she's from DOJ. I don't remember if they said what her position was at DOJ, but here we have the Justice Department, who's run by the president, connected, making sure that Red is executed. And they know that Red knows, that he knows, that she knows, that there's some kind of dossier out there, you know, with it. So they said, when Red dies, it dies with him.
The more interesting thing on filming and composing the shots when Anne and the president are together, you always notice that Anna's like on the right hand side, right? Yep. Right hand of the president.
Right hand man. Yep.
I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so brilliantly done. And she is just conniving and cold, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So great.
The DOJ, yeah, right. What was it? The DOJ stands firmly with 2 feet on Reddington's throat.
Yep.
Harsh, harsh.
I don't normally like to judge somebody before I meet them, but in your case, I'm going to make an exception.
I mean, she is going to be one piece of work, and I'm excited to see what she does going forward. Now, President Diaz is back, and apparently someone has paid him off, or he's part of the larger conspiracy. Now, they're distancing him, right? Because the less he knows, the better for him and his position of power.
But plausible deniability.
It is clear he's got some enough inside knowledge that he knows about the greater plan, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, he has to know the basics of it, because again, it's plausible deniability. It's like, well, I didn't really know. Nobody told me any of this stuff. So he has some deniability with it. But the fact is that he's obviously been corrupt since obviously before he was president, just like most politicians are. So it's interesting to see how they brought him back full circle to where, you know, he didn't really exist. He wasn't in the, you know, in our, you know, world, in our universe. And now he's back as president. And now he's in a bigger conspiracy against America, which is even worse. It's not even like he's taking bribes or kickbacks. You know, he's doing stuff against our country as president of the country. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with that and how far, you know, it reaches. But, you know, it's the old story. It's how far, how high does it go? Because, I mean, even Red said it's, you know, the highest levels of government. Well, it doesn't get any higher than the president.
And is there another government involved? So it's right. A two government conspiracy. We've been focusing a lot on Russia inside of the series. But much like 24, when they switched gears and then started focusing on China, it'd be interesting to see if another country comes to play as this progresses and as we head into season 7.
Yeah, it's that shadow government, you know, thing that, you know, is behind it. And it's like, who's really pulling the strings, you know, of this thing?
I was pleasantly surprised, because I thought for sure that, and I said it last week, I think, on the podcast, that I had a feeling there was going to be an assassination attempt, but I thought the assassination was going to be on President Diaz. So here, this is a really nice twist and a really nice surprise this week.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the same thing going forward. I was like, you know, wouldn't it be interesting? Because I still hold out the belief that at the end of this season, we're going to get Katarina's going to come back. The question is, does she come back to work with Red and Liz and the task force to take down this shadow government, this corruption, whatever this outside force is? Does she need to come back to fight this cabal? Because this is going to be the, you know, the war at the end.
Or if she's alive and a completely different person.
Right.
Then is she the one leading this shadow government?
Right. That's the other thing, too, is depending on which side she's on, you know, is she the one that gets forced out of the shadows because of Red and the task force? Or does she come back to help Red and the task force? Or is she already here and we just don't know it yet?
Correct. Well, Dembe, you would think that with all the two truths and a lie stuff that they've been doing on Instagram, that at this point of the show, Dembe's going to be like, hey, Liz, I just want you to let you know.
Right.
Till the end, Dembe is the keeper of secrets. Doesn't spill a single thing to Liz while they're sitting next to each other waiting for the curtain to be pulled.
Yeah, he's that loyal friend we all want, honestly. He does what it takes, and he's loyal to a fault almost, you know, with it. I didn't like the idea of him keeping secrets from Red. You know, we go back to the whole, did Dembe lie or not? I don't like the idea of him holding secrets, because unfortunately we've seen what happens when you go behind Red. But I think that honestly, he has more of a connection to Dembe than he did to Kaplan. So even if he found out, I don't think he would do anything. I think Red has changed a lot since Kaplan when it comes to, you know, Liz and keeping secrets from her.
Now, I'm assuming that you're all in the same camp with me. Like, you're assuming that Red is not going to die.
Right? Yes.
Something's going to happen to save his life. I mean, we got the season 7 renewal. And I have to say, I mean, I love the fact that we got the renewal news early, because last year was really super stressful the weekend before the uprunts for a lot of people. So I appreciate the early renewal. Thank you, NBC, for making that happen. But you couldn't have waited 2 more weeks.
Right.
Yeah. Like, what is the point of releasing the news when you did, when you have this powerful episode? You have like the two people that are like, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I love you. And they finally come to terms with stuff. and they're sitting there looking at each other through this glass. You get the cliffhanger. By announcing season 7, it like takes the complete emotional weight of the episode off the table for me.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But you know, even when we go back to when Liz faked her own death, like nobody really believed that Liz was going to die. You know, nobody really bought into that. It's the same thing. I don't think anybody would have believed that Red would have died unless they still were under the presumption that this was going to be the final season. And then it's okay, then we only have 10 episodes to deal with it. But you're right, because most, you know, was it May that most, you know, episode seasons are renewed or canceled or anything like that. And we got it so early, you know, with it. You're right. They could have just waited a couple of weeks. Let us hang on this a little more, because I don't see a year and a half of The Blacklist without Red.
Yeah, because if you're hanging in the balance thinking season 6 might be the end, I mean, you might get like a 50-50 play of people that are like, Red's going to die, Red's going to live. You announce season 7 and you know Spader's got a contract through 7, you're sitting there going, man, he's going to live. It goes to like 80-20 because of that.
You know, I said it last year because, you know, obviously we don't really know, you know, what's going on. They moved The Blacklist to Friday night. They waited till like the 11th hour, which is like Red's waiting for, to renew for season 6. And then you start watching. And I said, you know, to me, the key is going to be probably the first 4, 5, 6 episodes where we see where the arc is going. And we'll know whether it's the last season or not, because I prefer and I hope that the Johns get to tell the story that they want. So in my opinion, watching the first handful of episodes is going to tell you where we're headed to say, you know, this is going to be the last season, that, the, you know, the revelations are starting to come. And you could see that in this season. And then they announced a renewal and I'm like, okay, so we know that it's going to be pushed another season, which is fine because, you know, John had said that 7 is the sweet spot and he'd like to tell it over 7 seasons. So I'm glad at least he's getting the 7 seasons. He's getting to tell the story he wants to tell. And hopefully we get the ending that we want. And then we can go back and rewatch on Netflix and go, now it all makes sense. How did I miss all these clues? They were all right there in front of me.
Problem is Netflix won't share the final season. If season 7 is the final season, it won't hit Netflix until like 3 months after the season ends. And you're going to be like, what do I do all summer?
Right.
Oh my gosh.
I'll figure out when there's a will, there's a way.
So the question I have for you, okay, let's play a scenario out that Red dies.
Ooh,
do you think Dembe would actually tell Liz the truth?
I do. Only because if you go back to the the Gravedigger episode, Caretaker?
Yeah, with the container that he burned that was supposed to go to Liz, but then he ends up burning it so she can't get it.
Right. He had in place a contingency, as you expect. Red has a contingency for everything. He had a contingency in place that in the event of his death, that I'm guessing that Dembe is supposed to get that and give it to Liz, which explained everything and the hows and the whys and the whos. So my guess is that he probably had an off-screenville conversation with Dembe and said, look, if in the event that anything should happen to me, you need to let Liz know, you know, everything, you know, about me that I didn't tell her, that I kept from her. So my guess is that one way or another that she would find out. So even if Red had died in this episode, that my guess is that the truth would have outed right there and it could have continued going forward because there's still going to be something out there if Red's there or not.
All right. I'll buy that. I think she doesn't. I think he doesn't say anything because they burned the canister in the Gravedigger episode. The Caretaker is his actual name. And you, with the whole realization of like, it doesn't matter who this person is. He cares about you nonetheless. You go out knowing that he did some great things by taking some people off the map, you know, making the world a better place to live, truly cared about Lizzie. So I think that Dembe would respect Red's wishes and not say anything.
Yeah, see, I guess that's where we're different. It is, I think that Dembe would, because I really think that Dembe wants to tell her. You know, he kept pushing Red, you got to tell her, Raymond. You got to tell her, Raymond. He kept pushing for him to tell her. If he's gone, she's never going to know. And then she's going to have to live the rest of her life with all of those questions left unanswered. And I think that Dembe is the kind of guy that would definitely tell her.
But I think Dembe is also the kind of guy who understands that it's Red's story to tell. You know, it'd be like, you tell me some really fantastic story about your life, and then I go to Aaron, let's say, and be like, Aaron, dude, Rory, blah, 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 blah. Like, I take away your ability to tell your story. I think that's what Dembe's saying. When it's like, you have to tell her. He's not saying, I'm going to tell her if you don't. He's just repeatedly saying, it's like, you have to own this. She has to hear it from you. And I think Demi would respect that.
Well, if you told Aaron my story, he wouldn't care anyway.
This is true. All right, let's move on to Aram. Now, Aram's watching the TV, pours some coffee, burns his hand, and then he also burns his relationship with Samar by snooping on her phone. Oh, do we have some words we have to have here between the lovely couple?
It wasn't intentional. He was cleaning off her phone after he spilled some coffee, harmless enough as it was, and she got a text that he happened to see because she forgot to change her settings so that the text doesn't show on the main screen. It should have just showed that she had a text. She forgot to change that setting in her iPhone.
The security privacy tip brought to you by the Blacklist Exposed podcast.
Exactly. If you don't want people to see what's on your screen, blank the screen. But it was funny, too. I was laughing so hard because Aram created the new version of the mic drop with his toilet drop.
Oh, my gosh. The toilet scene dying. Is so funny.
He's like, uh-oh. And I'm like, oh, thank God he's not like a germaphobe that he's reaching in the toilet to pick it up. And when they were filming it, is it like, did they set up a new toilet and pour regular water in there? Or is that an actual toilet that they used?
Yeah, I'd love to know the backstory behind that. Like, did they just buy a cheap one from the Home Depot and roll it on in? And
since it's going to be fresh on our minds, he's going to be there next weekend at C2E2.
Yeah, we'll have to ask that question. That's a good one.
I'm curious about that. But it is great now that they have brought Samar back, because we talked about it last week, how right. It was kind of just glossed over. And now they really brought it back, but they've progressed it so much now since the last time we've seen it. It's curious to see how bad it's going to get, you know, with it. And the way he just loves her, you can see it, you know, at least the way he portrays it is just great. I love that.
And I love how, even though he was like annoyed with the fact that she's kept the secret from him, he's like angry, but he's not angry, you know?
Like, yeah, he's mad, but he's still ultimately concerned, you know, for her health and well-being going forward.
Well, Samar, though, she's as stoic as ever in the relationship. I don't want to talk about this now, but we have to talk about the fact that she's firing a weapon and she sees these blinding flashes of light. Do you think that it was a lucky shot that she was able to get Kruger in the leg?
Probably. I mean, I'm just questioning, too, that is she second guessing herself when she's out there? Like, do I pull the trigger? Should I take the shot? You know, what's going on, you know, with it? It just feels like she's on the fast decline now. Like, it's progressed so much that, like, she's accepted her fate now, that she knows that now, okay, there's nothing I can do to stop this. You know, I'm not going to get better. I just need to manage, you know, the symptoms with it. You know, is this the end of her task force days? I kind of think that, you know, it's going to be over pretty damn soon.
Or if she does something even more risky, like what happens if, say, like, oh, I can't be on the task force because I'm a danger to everybody here. But because Samar and she still wants to work, you know, maybe she goes and finds her good old buddy Oded Fehr and say, hey, Mossad buddies, let's go ahead and have some fun.
Yeah, I mean, she could do that, or does she keep pushing herself on the task force, and ultimately it's Aram who goes to Cooper and says, hey, listen, you need to know about this. That would be really interesting.
And I said Oded Fehr, I meant, you know, Levi, for those that are, Levi's his name on the show. Oded is the actor. It'd be fun to see a Mossad play with the whole, with this big conspiracy coming around now.
Right. Now, how much does Mossad know if they bring him back? Is Mossad in on, you know, the know with this dossier and what's going on with this plan? But I still think it would be interesting if Aram was forced to go to Cooper with it. Who does he put first, like the job or his relationship?
Interesting times ahead. Speaking of Cooper, right, Harold does everything he can to save Red, including put his career online. He's talking back to Panabaker, like demanding, like, you right here. You get me a meeting with the president. I'm like, I thought she was your boss, Cooper.
Right.
And then he like forces his way into the White House at the end of the episode to make sure he can go and get a stay or a commutation or anything from the president. What do you think of Cooper this week?
Love Cooper. I love when he's in this mode. Reminds me of when they were at the cabin, you know, with that whole thing. You know, I love when Cooper's out there, you know, putting it, you know, to the thing. But the thing is, too, it makes me wonder, what is the real connection with Red and Cooper? That, you know, I get that, you know, Cooper believes in the task force and the work that they're doing, But at the same time, there's got to be something deeper there with him and Red that he's willing to go to these lengths to protect him and save his life. Then he threatens to take down the president. You know, when Pennybaker says to him, well, that would be career suicide, he says, yeah, for the president.
I love that line.
It was so great. That
line. It was so good.
So good. So, I mean, that's the thing, too, is what is the other connection? Because we know that supposedly Cooper and Red have a connection pre-Task Force.
And I think that's one of my biggest questions of the series right now, because now that we know he's an imposter, we know that Cooper's like, what first line in the series was, is it really him? Question mark. Right. So he's worked with Raymond Reddington in the past. So does he know who this imposter is? Is he part of the greater scheme, the greater plan? Or does he truly have faith that this is the man that he worked with all those years ago in Kuwait and whatnot? And is he going to be as hoodwinked as everybody else when you find out that he's not really Raymond Reddington?
Right. I mean, that is ultimately the question. He knew Red pre-Red, so, or Fred. Does he know that Red's not really Red? Does he have a suspicion? We've never seen any of that, you know, brought up by Cooper, so we don't know where it's going to go. But I'm just curious, did he know? When did he know? Does he know? Like, there's so many things on this show that I love, and this is one of them, to where we go back. He tested the DNA, proved that it was Red. What DNA did he test? The shirt, do we know that it was really Red's blood? Like, there's so many things that we could go back into, but I want to see where this progresses, because he's really going out on a limb. Like, I get the work is important, you know, and you're saving people's lives. You're taking down criminals you didn't even know existed. I get all of that, but there has to be more. Like, if you're willing to go to these lengths, and even Red calls him my friend.
Well, he's become a friend, especially in these last 6 years.
Yeah, and you think about where it started, you know, their relationship where, you know, he was using them to get things and Harold was just like, okay, fine, you can use my computer to search for things, you know, and get access to things. And now it's like they're buds. They're hanging out, like, you know, they're friends. I love it. I love how everything's progressing, where we see the character development and see the relationships and bonds that have formed with everybody.
And I think this is one of the things, like, you talk about the TV show Lost and the people that are like, oh, Lost sucked because it didn't give me all these answers. And then you have the other people who are like, Lost is the greatest show on TV because it was about the relationships. And
right.
I'm hoping that there are a little bit more answers in The Blacklist than there were in Lost. But at the same time, it's a show about the relationships. It's about this team. And we got that this week, right? You know, Red's our family and we're yours. It's about the people. Red can die knowing that these people are here and able to take care of you now. So I don't have to take care of you anymore. I think that that's one of the great things about The Blacklist, having the ensemble cast, is that you can say, you know, it's about these relationships. It's not about all of the mythology and things of that nature. Like Spader said it himself, was at the Comic-Con right away after season one. He's like, you know, do you want to know who Raymond Reddington is? I don't think you want to know. I don't think that's what it's about. You know,
and that's for me, that's where I've progressed too, because when it first started, I was like, who is this, you know, guy? What is his connection to Liz? And through the season, you know, and through the series, I've, you know, come around to that theory too, where I'm more interested in the characters connected to each other and how far they've come together and how they've built the family, you know, because remember, Samar came in, they didn't trust her. When Liz first came in and she was doing shady things, Wrestler didn't trust her. And now to see like the full circle they've come and how they're close they are, that Liz is bringing Wrestler in, you know, after she kills somebody and they're covering it up and you know, looking out for each other. It's so amazing to see the dynamic and how it's, you know, come full circle.
Well, speaking of Wrestler, he pretty much just leads the point on the hotel sweep, breaks into the house to get Kruger, just usual Wrestler stuff this week again.
Yeah, but he had some great lines that I loved, you know, like when they're in France, he's like blue jacket, gray pants, super French. I was cracking up when he did that. Twice he tells Saram to get a room, you know, I'll even get the room for you. And then his heartfelt moment with Liz, which was great. I mean, there was so much emotion in this episode. You could see it. You could feel it on the screen. It was palpable. You know, he says the question of searching for answers and the mystery of who this man is, in the end, he's just a man who loves you very much. And I just thought that was so powerful. I thought that's what actually changed her from asking the question at the prison.
But what man?
Right. But does it matter what man or woman?
Anyways, I love and it's great coming from Wrestler that they have this speech, because we know that he's in the know and he's been chasing this person for 5 years And even he's kind of resigned to the fact that it doesn't really matter because he just cares about you, Liz. So you want the answers or you don't want the answers. It doesn't matter. He's just going to be there, and he is what he is. So I love that conversation came from wrestlers specifically versus coming from like Cooper or Dembe or somebody else.
I was waiting for him to bust out, "I'm just a boy standing in front of a girl." I was like, oh God. That would have been great. Because I do think there has been some on-screen chemistry between the two of them, you know, between Liz and Wrestler. That honestly, I'd like to see that progress. I'd like them together, but after the task force is over. We can't have everybody married in the task force.
That's for sure. And we have to see what happens with Saram in the long term, given her illness and stuff.
True, true.
All right, so let's talk about Liz then. She does want to be a witness at Red's execution, and they're having a conversation, sitting there over the cabbage soup and dressed herring, which is a very Russian meal. We'll point that out there.
Yes.
And if his mother served that, not saying that anybody else couldn't serve it, but it is a very Russian meal. And I just love when he's like, yeah, when I was a kid, and he's like, and then Liz, and every time Red's talking about it, he's referencing it as kid or child or very non-gender specific. And Liz is the one that's like, I can't imagine you. I can't imagine that.
As a boy.
You as a boy. I laughed out loud so hard. And I was like, I don't even care if the Red Arena theory comes true or not. But the fact that the writers are like using lines like that to kind of like throw those like digs in there.
Right. That's super fun. Are they trolling you and the fans or what? Because when you first brought that theory around, and I can't say that it was honestly you that created this theory. I'm going to give you the credit because as far as I'm concerned, you did. And the explosion and everything else, because wasn't it when you had the interview with Daniel Knopf that you brought this out?
Well, we talked about it in season two on the podcast long before, but I think it was the Daniel Knopf interview that got it into the writer's room specifically. And then Daniel Knopf was like, I'm going to tell John that tomorrow. That's awesome.
And it just kind of blew up and grew from there to the point that it's so out there, you know, and there's so many people on that train that it's so great. It feels like when I was watching that scene, I'm like, oh my God, are they trolling everybody? Is this real? Like, can it be real? You know, because I'm like, I've been at the station. I'm not on the train. I'm at the station looking at it, you know, reading where, you know, what stops you're going to make. And I see a scene like this, and I'm like, should I get on the train? Should I buy a ticket? You know, because it's either they're trolling you or this is real.
Right. That'd be interesting to see on how that all plays out. And the reason why we're talking about this is because even though Red has a really great conversation, which we'll get to in a minute, the number one thing that is happening in this situation is this is the last meal. This is the one and only time that Liz has to ask the question. And I'm going to be Aaron this week, and I'm literally sitting there going like, dear God, just ask anything. It doesn't have to even be like, who are you? It could just be like, what was this all about? Or why did you choose that moment to come into my life? Just ask any question at all.
Yep. I literally was screaming at my TV. I'm like, say it, say it. Like, I was just like, say it. I wanted her to say it so bad. I just knew she wasn't going to.
Sam Kennison.
Say that.
But yeah, it's so frustrating. It was like, come on. Come on, just ask a question.
That's why I think that wrestler's voice was in her head.
Oh, for sure.
Telling her it's not important to ask that question. You know, she got that. That was, you know, it's like the last thing that people tell you, like, when you're taking a test, don't study right before the test because all you're going to remember is what you studied at that moment before. And that's kind of what it was that wrestler got in her ear. Filled her with that, which was great. And it was definitely, you know, sincere. And at that moment, that little voice of wrestlers came in her ear and said, don't ask the question. Doesn't matter. You love this man. He's taking care of you. You know, for whatever reason, whoever he is, doesn't matter. Say this.
And apparently,
she did. And
apparently you want to marry Elizabeth Keen, not Megan Boone. You want to marry Elizabeth Keen because she's going to be loaded, according to Red. Like, all this money is going to go to her.
Yes. And I loved how she just glossed over it. She didn't care. No, that's important to her. And he should know that too. Like, it's great that he feels like, yeah, he got all this money for her, so she knows she's taken care of. But obviously, she don't care about that stuff. Doesn't matter. She just glossed over it. He didn't even say it. But that look at the end, oh my God.
So here we have Megan Boone acting as well as she does and just stands there, looks at him, and just delivers that I love you line so perfectly.
Oh.
That you're like, your heart melts. But then in the back of your mind, you're like, oh my God, I feel for Red so bad, because when he finds out that Liz was behind this whole thing, like, what is that going to do to the relationship, you know?
Soul crushing it will be. But it, I mean, it was one of those things, like, you've never, this is like the one and only time you've ever seen Red speechless.
Yeah, speechless, he's always got vulnerable, something. Just taking it all in. Like, this is the one thing he's probably wanted to hear his whole life.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Red next, but when he was delivering that speech about his parents, and he couldn't even get the word my mother, like, it was so, you could feel the emotion. Like, that's what I love when an actor can do something that makes you feel that emotion. Not, he's not just delivering a line. The pure emotion that was in that delivery was just so powerful. It really was.
Well, let's talk about Red then. So he considers Cooper a friend. He's the best, the best,
the best.
Really doesn't like Anna, has no idea who she is, seems confused a little bit by her presence, yet uber curious, but dislikes her absolutely nonetheless. And then we get the whole conversation over the cabbage soup and dressed herring prepared by his mother. I'm okay if this is my final meal. He's literally reserved the fact that he is well aware that he is going to die today.
That's the thing. I mean, have we seen this in the series? He's always so confident. He's always so larger than the room, you know, kind of personality, where he always knows, like, I'm going to get away with this. I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to walk my way through this. It just feels like he's like resigned to the fact that this could be it. Like, maybe I am stuck in a position that I can't get out of for the first time ever.
And to be okay with it, I find is very interesting. And the reason why he's okay with it is, of course, because he knows people like Cooper and Wrestler and Aram and all these people around her will take care of her and protect her. And that was really all this was in the first place, was he needed to come into her life in order to keep her safe. He came out because Tom was turning on the deal, went to go side with Berlin, so she's no longer safe. That's why he comes out of hiding, is out of love. And so,
line, you know, that 6 years ago, I turned myself in because of you, and now at the end, I'm at peace because of them, was amazing. And then the screenshots, you know, of each one of them as he's delivered is so amazing, so amazingly done.
Yeah, he says, talks about being a difficult child, misunderstood, seen one way, acted another. Father was moralistic. His mother understood him. His voice cracks when talking about his mother repeatedly. Understood problems of the human heart in conflict with itself. I should have taught you to think like her. I should have thought like her. I thought that was very telling.
Very.
If she would have seen you, she knew you would be fine, because you have the only thing that matters, people who love you, that you can depend on. People who will always tell you the truth. I am at peace here at the end, because of them.
So amazing.
Such a good
amazingly scene. Written, amazingly delivered. I mean, just everything across the board, you know, with it was so great. So great. And it just told so much about him that it's like the first time you ever see Red vulnerable.
And I think,
you know, with it,
people always talk about, you know, Spader should get an Emmy. Spader should get an Emmy. This particular episode, I think, is one that they would have to submit for an Emmy nomination for him, because it runs the whole gamut of emotions of his, you know, criminalistic side when he's talking to Anna, the, you know, real dark and deep and twisted person when he's talking to the guy who's injecting him to test to see if he's got allergies to the drugs, and just the way he grabs his arm and pulls him in and the look on his face, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I'd be like pooping my pants at that point.
For real, he probably did.
And then you got, you know, this tender hearted moments of like, ah, Elizabeth, come join me, you know, and then he has this deep emotional connection. And then just the look through the glass, like you said, that parallelism between the reflection of the two of them sitting side by side and Red in the middle between them. And like, oh, such a good camera shot. Such a great shot.
It really was, you know, the emotions were real in this episode. So as much as we're focusing on, you know, what's the plot, the dossier, you know, all those things, for me, it was just a raw emotion, you know, that not only just Spader, just, you know, that Megan delivered, that all of them delivered in that moment, you know. And it's the same thing we talked about last week, you know, with Liz, where a lot of people don't like the way she's written and some people don't like the way she's portrayed and the way Megan plays her. I'm sorry, but if this doesn't get you on, I mean, she was amazing. You could see it in her, and the raw emotion they played off of each other was so great to watch, and I felt it. Like, it came through. I felt it.
And we would have had even more emotion had they not announced season 7 just 4 days before. Ugh.
It's all right. I don't think anybody really would have believed that Red was going to die.
That would be an interesting poll to take. Like, do you really think Red's going to kick the bucket next week?
Right. And I guarantee you 85% would say no.
Right.
That he's not. Because, you know, even if they, you know, what would they do going forward? Let's play, you know, devil's advocate. Let's say that, you know, they did kill Red off on the show. You still have, what, 12 episodes left, 11 episodes left? You know, going forward, what do you do? Do you do flashbacks? How are you going to tie up all the loose ends without Red in the current day? It would be interesting.
Well, then you just switch to the Liz and Wrestler show at that point, and they go tracking down this big conspiracy to avenge Red's death, and you have a whole 12-episode arc on that.
Yeah, and then the season end is we find out what the whole thing was about, and Liz and Wrestler get together. I'm with that.
Would have been good.
I'm on board that train.
All right, overall, what do you think? Give a rating for this episode. We were pretty okay. Low last week, so I'm assuming this one's going to be a lot higher.
Yeah, last week I was really critical. I said 3 or 4. I mean, that might have been a little bit low, you know, for it, but I think it was just, you know, I don't know. I expect more from The Blacklist because it is the one show that I truly watch religiously multiple times. I would give this episode a 8.5 to 9, okay. To be honest.
Now you say 8.5. I'm going to give it an 8. I would have given it a 9 had it not been for the ridiculously fast execution.
But, you know, I look past those things. You know, you watch TV long enough, you realize, like I said, I call it off-screenville, you know, that all these things happen off-screen. And I know, it's, you know, there wasn't a time jump or anything like that. But for the interests of the television viewing audience, we don't want Red on death row for the next season and a half.
And then I knocked it down from a 10. So the 2 points were the fast execution time. And then the second one is the classic TV trope of the, like, any last words? Cliffhanger. It's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, you knew that was coming too. Like I said, for me, 8.5, I don't usually rate high. Like, you know, I'm rough on when it comes to, you know, rating things. So for me, 8.5 to 9 is probably as high as you can get because 10 is perfection and there's no such thing as perfection. So we'll never have a 10.
That was Kate May. Kate May was pretty close to a 10.
Yeah, it was. That's about as close as you can get to a 10 in my book. You know, that one of my favorite episodes of the series. So I would say if I had to rate that episode, that gets like a 9.5. All right. So with that, we wanted to take a quick second to say thank you to all of you who's supporting the show by going to Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm, or anywhere you see the word support the show. You can help make the podcast better by throwing a few dollars, pounds, yen, whatever in the hat, so to speak. We have different support levels, which can get you cool rewards like a t-shirt. If you become a task force member, or syndicate member, you can even get your own blacklist number.
And every bit of support helps, and we're excited that Doug is our official blacklister. Doug gets his own blacklist number, so if you want to get in on that, that's at the $50 a month level. Also, thank you to our syndicate members, Marilyn and Lacey. Syndicate members and above get a monthly call with me, along with Doug. We'll be doing that on Monday night this week, so if you want in on that call, just $25 a month gets you there. And then we have our task force members, Leonie, Brandon, Jim, Stacy, and Florian. They all have received Blacklist Exposed t-shirts. Pretty awesome. I saw one in the wild yesterday, up close and personal. They came out really well. So if you want a t-shirt, just jump on in at the $15 a month level.
Also, a shout out to Kevin, Paulette, Priscilla, Isabel, Richard, Nell, James, Judy, Rachel, and Sharon for being amazing special agents for supporting us and the podcast.
Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Fill the fedora, get some awesome rewards for yourself. And remember, C2E2 is just 1 week away. That's right. It is currently St. Patrick's Day here in the States, March 17th. This coming weekend, C2E2, we have people coming from all over. They're coming from Quebec. They're coming from Ontario. They're coming from Texas. They're coming from Jersey. Yes.
That would be me.
That'd be Rory. you definitely want to be there. So badges are currently for the 3 days. So if you want to buy a badge for the entire weekend, those badges are currently 90% sold out. Do not wait to buy them at the door. You can buy your badge online, pick it up at Will Call. If you want to come just for the Blacklist panel, just for the day, those badges, I believe, are $45 for Saturday. So grab that. There's a Clueless reunion panel if you're a Clueless fan right before the Blacklist panel. David Tennant's going to be there if you're a Doctor Who fan.
Love me some Tennant.
Aaron is actually moderating the Cobra Kai panel on Sunday. So if you're a Cobra Kai fan or a Karate Kid fan, especially now that we're in its anniversary year this year and they're re-releasing Karate Kid on 4K, you definitely want to check that out. So it's a fun weekend. Artists will be everywhere, comic books, cosplay, you know, at C2E2. We are at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday up there on the fourth floor rooms. So definitely get your badge, C2E2.com, and we will see you there. And we'll be back with all of your thoughts on this episode for part one of Bastion Moreau and Special Agent Intel right after this.
Theorizing that one could time travel within his own lifetime, Dr. Sam Beckett stepped into the Quantum Leap Accelerator and vanished.
Hello, Rewatchers. I'm Corey.
And I'm Tom.
And we are two-thirds of the Rewatch Podcast, a podcast dedicated to discussing film and television series of the past on the Golden Sparrow Media Network.
Right now, we are deep into our Quantum Leap rewatch, discussing two episodes of the show every week. You can also head back into our archive and find our episodes covering Sliders, Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, and The Flash 90, with every episode of the show covered in the same two-episode-a-week format.
And don't forget, you can also join Nathan and I most weeks discussing a movie, typically part of a film franchise or series, with a few one-offs here and there.
So check out the Rewatch Podcast at goldenspiralmedia.com/rewatchpodcast and or find us on your favorite podcast app. And until next time, we gotta leave.
Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
All right, let's see what you all thought about this week's episode with our special agent Intel. Lisa's up first. They said they should have waited to announce the show was renewed for season 7 until after the execution episodes, especially since it was announced that James Spader will be in season 7 unless he just appears in flashbacks. I highly doubt it, though.
Me too.
It's not us. We're not just the only ones that are like, marketing department.
We knew that was coming through.
Also, we have a quick voicemail from Sharon Peterson this week.
Hey, guys. This is Sharon Peterson. And I am calling about The Blacklist, and I just want to give a little feedback for the episode. Well, two things. One, boy, Liz sure has turned around, huh? I mean, you know, she whips out an I Love You. I almost forgot that she was hell-bent on bringing this guy down. That beside the point. Can you guys talk about the, even by TV standards, much as I love the show, even by TV standards, the remarkable hyperspaced time warp that happened where they went from execution or from conviction to execution, even by TV standards, that is remarkably fast. Because our legal system hasn't worked that fast. I don't care if he requested to be executed. It just doesn't happen like that. I would like to hear you guys see a little bit about that and what you thought about the almost Game of Thrones-esque, Game of Thrones season 7-esque time warp through time and space. Okay, thanks, guys. I love what you do, and I really miss that other guy.
Oh, I totally agree with you, Aaron. I mean, Sharon, couldn't expect it more. Got to have a Peterson on the podcast this week. Well, James said, I knew the Corsican would be back. Wonder what's on that dossier. I also believe that we have a new cabal falling into place, and I believe that one or two people sitting at that table with the president might very well be involved. And that's some of the future, and season 7 will be about a new cabal. What do you think about that possibility?
I don't think it's a new cabal. I think it's the enemies of the cabal. That's where I'm landing right now.
Yeah, I think it's part of the old global cabal. We only saw one faction that Red took down and took control of. But again, that map showed it everywhere. Everywhere, literally.
Multiple-headed Hydra, and the war has just begun.
Yep, take down one, two more grow back.
Paula said, do you think Red made friends with the guy that administered the test meds, and that's how he's actually going to escape? Red is way too okay with all this lethal injection stuff.
You know, I thought that too in the beginning because the kind of look that he gave him and everything else. And I was like, well, maybe not. Because it just doesn't, it's not in Red's nature to kind of give up, but it kind of seemed like he surrendered, you know, in this episode a little bit. So Vera said, all in my feelings about this episode, we'll have to watch it again. Oh, I already did that. Well, guess I'll have to watch it a third time. Don't worry. I did too. I watched it three times.
I did too. Nikki said, what if Red has the antidote to the drugs they will use to kill him? We saw a doctor in the pharmacist that we investigated earlier this season, and we haven't actually seen something from that pay off yet.
I agree. It's just that unless he had him already involved, that combination of drugs in your system, there's no way around that. So Wendy said, really liked the scene between Liz and Red. I thought that was sweet. Him talking about all the people she has around her and the camera focuses on each one in turn. During the comments he made, oh God, I'm starting to well up again. Me too, a little bit.
Bill said, I was disappointed in the fact that the Cabal storyline fizzled out. Now I am super excited to find out that the POTUS is dirty.
Dirty. Yeah, I agree. I like that they're bringing the Cabal storyline back. Grant said, the writing has been pretty good this season. I love how they are still connecting everything from the beginning. I feel much better than I did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I was nervous a couple of weeks ago. Like, how long is this prison thing going to go on? And why isn't Liz finding anything out about what's going on? And
yeah, I'm kind of glad that it seems like, you know, one way or another, that this is going to probably be the end of Red in prison.
Yeah, and I think, granted, it's still a little bit of a slippery slope, right? The whole point of him being in prison was for her to find out about the imposter. And right. we found out a little bit about it, but we didn't find out a ton about it. So did that pay off in the way that I think it was kind of like promised or led into at the start of the season?
I think part of it changed once Jennifer kind of backed out and she saw the way Liz was and was like, oh, I don't want to be like that. Forget it. I don't care that much.
I mean, if that was the whole point of it, I could say like maybe that was a bill of goods that was sold a little bit too high. But at the same time, maybe that's part of it is not quite all played out yet because you had this whole situation come up now with this faction and this issue and targeting the government and or America. And Red found out about it. Only the problem was that Liz was the one that goofed it up again because she's the one that put him in jail.
Right. And the fact still remains that when he gets out, he still knows that Liz and Wrestler both know he's not who he says he is. He knows that now, fact.
Well, we assume he's reading into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obvious. It's so obvious.
Right.
He has to. He's Red. Come on. He knows.
Well, Bianca said the Blacklist is ultimately a love story, and the most compelling reason people love the show is because they respond to the love he has for her and why that is. They have done an amazing job of telling the story without still giving the ultimate answer. That still leaves us so connected to the characters. As contrived as the idea of going through with the execution scenes when they obviously won't happen seems, kudos to the writers and actors for doing justice to the Red and Liz story at its truest form. I love that they get the opportunity to play out those emotions and showcase the ultimate hook of the story.
Well said. So well said. Rita Parna says, just watched a gripping episode, and I have to say, although we all know Red's going to escape somehow, the show is cutting it really close. Kudos to the team. That's two kudos in a row. I have a sneaky feeling Red has the dossier, and somehow that is how Red will gain his freedom. Red's been going through this whole thing with much resistance, and that in itself is a clue. And very un-Reddington-like, I think in the next episode, Mr. Moreau will be led to the Red, and perhaps the Cabal, in search of the dossier, which will force the president to grant the last-second clemency.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun. Basha Moreau and Red face-to-face.
Oof. Love it when the bad guys get together with Red. It's always a great scene.
Well, that's because then it probably ends up that the bad guys aren't the bad guys. You find out that they're actually on the same team.
Right. Will he convert Moreau to his team?
It's a possibility. Who knows?
No, he's going to take him out. He killed Dr. Kohler. I think Red liked him. So yeah. I think it's done for him.
Or he converts him and then kills him after the fact, after Red gets what he wants out of him, because Red's his selfish SOB.
Look out at the water.
All right. Another amazing episode from Dee Dee. I had to watch it several times before I could even leave a post. The entire show had a feel of the first couple of seasons. I loved how the team worked together, and I always like the heist scenes. Leave it to Aram to drop the keys in the toilet. The conspiracy, I had it totally wrong. I figured it was going to be about someone trying to kill the president and not him being the ringleader.
Yeah, I don't think anybody saw that coming. It's a nice little twist they put on. It's a good way to bring that shadow government cabal back. Well, Lindsay said, Liz, I love you. Melted my heart. This episode did give me so much feels and reminded me of the teamwork and relationships from the first two seasons.
Yeah, that's the one thing I love when they were all on the plane together. It was just like, oh man, this is what Blacklist is supposed to be. This is great. I love it.
I love it. Ocean's 11, just bringing it all back. You know, they're supposed to be the FBI task force and they're like planning this whole like, you know, scheme. It's great.
Oh boy, from Caroline. What a fantastic episode. It sure ran the gamut of emotions. I really did not think there would be room enough for laughs, but Aram dropping the keys in the toilet had me rolling on the floor. It was so unexpected in the midst of all the angst going on.
So funny.
I loved seeing the entire task force highlighted, further proof that this story was influenced by the wonderful Harry Potter stories. However, in that same light, now I am teensy bit worried about Red. Bravo, Blacklist powers that be, for bringing it. I really didn't think I would like this episode, but I was pleasantly surprised.
I couldn't agree more. And Nate said, my big question, when did the Blacklist start feeling like 24? When it showed that the president was in on the conspiracy, I expected Jack Bauer to jump out, break Red out of jail, shoot a terrorist in the kneecaps, and hunt down the president. I loved it. I can't wait for next week. I truly think next week will blow our minds in so many pieces that we'll be looking for giving Bokenkamp our firstborn child. LOL. This is the Blacklist at its finest hour. It's exhilarating and poignant at the same time. I can't wait for next week. Same Red time, same Red channel.
And we close up with Grace. Liz knows the imposter loves her, and she cares about him, too. That's why she's weakening. In other news, I think I've been converted to the Renarita supporter camp. You win, Troy Heinrichs.
I think we're going to meet a bigger train.
Welcome to the dark side, Grace. Welcome to the dark side.
You know, I wanted to make a Star Wars reference, and I forgot to throw it in there. But it's everything is true from a certain point of view.
From a certain point of view. That's the thing. Everybody is entitled to their opinion, and we all must talk and converse and theorize each other and respect kindly in return.
Right. Just because you don't believe in one thing doesn't mean somebody else isn't right on something else. You know, we all see it the way we want to see it. So everything is true from a certain point of view. You see it your way. We see it our way. We discuss it. We agree to disagree. And hey, maybe you might show me things that I haven't seen and get me on your train. Because I dare you to try.
Because a Red Arena person might be sitting next to an imposter theory person, next to a Lizington person, next to a Datagate person at C2E2 next week. Yes. Get your badges, yes. C2E2.com. Make sure you are there.
I will be there Saturday about 10 a.m. So you want to find me, message Facebook group. We'll meet up if we want beforehand. I'll be there.
Yep, and we're still trying to figure out if we can actually live stream the panel to the Facebook group. So if we can make that happen, just keep your eye out about 1:30 Central. Daylight saving time really messed up the entire world time clock thing. So whatever,
always does.
Is that 4 hours now or 5 hours to the universal mean time? I think it's 5 hours. So I think that's like 6:30 UMT.
I don't know. Don't ask me. I thought you were going to ask me for Zulu time, and I'm like, I have no idea. I'm trying to figure it out in my head.
Put it into Google. Say, what's 1:30 p.m. Central time in America in my time zone? That's what time we'll be live, if we are live, on Facebook, in the Facebook group on Saturday, March 23rd.
Well, with that, that'll conclude this episode, but be sure to follow us on Twitter at the Blacklist GSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed when possible, and we use the show's hashtag, The Blacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or what your last meal might be.
Yeah, it wouldn't be herring. Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. What are Red's last words?
I want chicken.
Why did I have the herring?
We'll see you next week. Oh, I should say, before we go, next week, Aaron will be back. We are going to put the podcast out immediately after the show ends, because obviously C2E2 has got us a little bit busy and all of that fun stuff. And we have an interview with Coy Stewart. That's right, Vontae Jones. We'll be playing that at the end of the podcast for next week. So definitely stick around. Podcast will drop hopefully right after the show ends on the East Coast. So if you're West Coasters, make sure you watch the show first and then listen to the podcast. But yeah, look for an interview with Coy Stewart. If you are a $5 patron or supporter or a higher, you can actually get that interview now. It is live over in your feed on Patreon.
Sweet.
Well, thanks so much, Rory, for filling in for Aaron. Appreciate it. And I look forward to meeting you in person for the first time this coming weekend.
Absolutely. I can't wait until Saturday, man. I'll see you then.
All right. See you all. Take care.
See ya.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.